Hello there, welcome back to a new episode of the Liberators Network podcast. I'm Christian Verwijs, and in today's episode we're going to talk about scaling Scrum, or more specifically, why you probably shouldn't. We haven't written that much about scaling Scrum, and we haven't recorded podcasts about it before, and there's a good reason for this. Because Barry and I are both very skeptical about efforts to scale Scrum in general. It doesn't really matter what framework you use. We think there is a big inherent contradiction to efforts to scale Scrum in general, and we'll explore this contradiction in this episode in detail. We will also offer you 5 strategies to help escape the need to scale up your Scrum, which we think is a better strategy in general. And just so you know, we don't have anything against specific scaling frameworks. We have our preferences, but in general, the argument in this episode applies to scaling Scrum in general, regardless of the framework that you use. So if we've done a good job, by the end of this episode, you will also be more skeptical of efforts to scale Scrum and hopefully explore many of the other alternatives before you start scaling your Scrum. This episode was made possible by our patrons, and I want to thank a few of them before I move into the episode itself. Sven-Peter Ekebus, Nick van den Broek, Chingpai Li, Oscar Gepski, David Fox, Charlotte Roos, Jamie Kriegel, Sebastian Zabrowski, Marise Meijne and Alex Ballerien. Thank you so much for joining to support our show and all the other content that we create. It's a big relief for Barry and me to know that you have our backs, especially in times of Corona, where it's very hard for us, and probably for most of you too, to generate any revenue at all. So the simple fact that we have patrons to support us is a great relief, and it means that we have time to do this kind of work, to create this kind of content for you. So if you like the content that we create too, and you're not supporting us already, you can go to patreon.com/liberators to do so. In return for your support, you get all sorts of nice benefits like early access, access to a private community that we're building at the moment on Discord. We're working hard on apps, initiatives, and all sorts of content that you can usually get for free when you're a patron, or maybe you get a discount in our webshop to purchase it for less than other people do. So there's a lot of benefits to explore, but without further ado, let's move into the episode, because that's what you're here for after all. Now, I don't know about you, but my experience is that scaling Scrum is seriously hard. How do you work with many teams on one product? How many product owners should you have for one large product that you're working on? How can many teams deliver a done increment every sprint? How do you manage the increasing number of dependencies between teams? Honestly, we believe that in most cases, scaling Scrum is tantamount to solving the wrong problem. And we say this irrespective of the framework that you use, Nexus, Less, or Safe. And let us explain why. The Scrum framework essentially exists to refine big things into smaller things, from entire projects to sprints, and from large features to small product backlog items. Though often very hard, this process of breaking down larger things into smaller things is a great way to reduce risk. Smaller is simpler, easier to control, and less wasteful when it doesn't work out, which often tends to happen in complex work. Simpler is also faster. This sentiment is expressed well in one of my favorite quotes: what one developer can do in one day, 2 developers can do in 2. This drive towards simplicity is strong in Scrum, as Gunter Verheyen also puts it in his quote that, "In the face of complexity, simplicity is our path." End quote. The simplest solution, in terms of the number of variables and people involved, is more effective than a more complicated one. So how does this relate to the scaling of development on a single product? Scaling inherently increases complexity because it introduces more variables. There are more teams, there are more people involved in development, there are more potential technical dependencies, more opportunities for adverse group dynamics, and more potential for politics. I'm sure most of us will accept this too. But why is it that we use a framework that encourages simplicity on the one hand, while also increasing complexity by adding more teams on the other hand? The mirroring hypothesis. One reason for this contradiction may lie in the seemingly inherent complexity in the product, In this case, the product is deemed so big and complex that it simply requires many teams and there's no other way around it. Yet there is a logical absurdity going on here, because if the product is so big and or so complex, how can it be a good idea to mirror that complexity in the product with complexity in the group of people that are developing that product? One explanation for this may be the reverse of something known as Conway's Law. This law states that, begin quote, any organization that designs a system will produce a design whose structure is a copy of the organization's communication structure, end quote. Although the effect is the other way around here, organizations seem to implicitly mirror the complexity of the product in the complexity of the development organization. McCormack, Ruskin, and Baldwin researched this in 2011, and they found evidence of this mirroring hypothesis by studying different pairs of development organizations, and they concluded that, begin quote, the product developed by loosely coupled organizations is significantly more modular than the product from tightly coupled organizations, end quote. Does that mean that complex products always require complex development organizations? When it comes to scaling and scaling frameworks like LESS, SAFe, and Nexus, there seems to be an implicit assumption that only the number of teams is a variable and not the complexity of the product itself. Behind this assumption lies a very different approach to product development, and we'll explore this next. Don't scale up development, de-skill your product. Instead of dialing up the number of teams, what would happen if we would apply a breakdown strategy to the product itself to reduce complexity? Just like we break down entire projects into smaller sprints and larger product backlog items into smaller ones, we can also break down large products into smaller products. By doing so, we reduce their complexity and make them simpler, smaller, and their risk more controllable. We can make the product small enough so that a handful of Scrum teams, preferably even one, can still deliver a useful and valuable increment of that product to its stakeholders. This approach may appear similar to something called feature teams. The difference here is that feature teams generally work on end-to-end features from a single shared product backlog with other teams. When you descale your product into many smaller products, you effectively end up with separate backlogs and independent Scrum teams that effectively act as product teams. Potential descaling strategies. Now, how can you break down a large product into smaller, simpler products? We're going to cover some of the strategies that we've used ourselves in the coming minutes, and they all share two characteristics. The first is that they result in vertical slices of a larger product. Each small product remains valuable in its own right to its own stakeholders. The second is that Scrum teams become or remain capable of delivering a working increment of the product to their stakeholders every single sprint. And by stakeholders here, we mean the actual users and customers, the people that have an actual stake in the product, and not simply proxy stakeholders like internal managers that don't actually use the product on their own. The first descaling strategy is to break down a large product into smaller ones based on the groups of stakeholders they serve. Take accountancy software like QuickBooks or Xero. One approach is to consider the entire software package as the product. But developing that product can easily take dozens, if not hundreds, of Scrum teams. Another approach is to consider various groups of stakeholders: entrepreneurs, small businesses, large corporates, or NGOs. In this case, the products become accounting for entrepreneurs, accounting for NGOs, and so on. This breakdown can go as far as needed to keep the development organization as simple as possible. For example, you could end up with a product that is designed for accounting for entrepreneurs in the Netherlands, or accounting for web shops. The most effective breakdown is the one that results in the smallest number of Scrum teams that can still deliver one cohesive product for a distinguishable set of stakeholders. The second descaling strategy is to break down a large product into smaller products based on the functional needs they fulfill. And Google is a good example of this. It has a wide range of products that are catered to specific needs. You have Google Drive for storage, you have Google Slides for presentation, Google Docs for documents, and so on. Each product is small enough and has a specific purpose, though is used by different groups of stakeholders. So this is also a way to break down your product. The third strategy is to break your product down by something we call creative destruction. Aside from breaking down your product into smaller products, the complexity of your product itself can also be reduced by removing what isn't valuable or useful enough anymore. This process of creative destruction removes features and code that needs to be maintained, hosted, and supported, and is no longer capable of introducing bugs. Far too often, products remain very complex because existing features that are not really used are still kept in the product, and removing those features makes your product a lot less complex. The fourth strategy is to not break down your product by technical layers. One common strategy is to break down products based on their application layers. So one team takes responsibility for the database, another for the backend code, and another maybe for the frontend. That's a bad idea. Although this strategy results in highly specialized teams, which might seem like an advantage, none of these teams can deliver working software on their own. If a group of stakeholders require a new feature, chances are that all teams need to perform work because changes to the database are needed to the backend and to the frontend to deliver that feature. And that means you have a lot of dependencies, a lot of coordination needs, and a lot of time you have to spend to make sure everyone's working on the right things and in the right order. The final strategy is that many products can appear as one. It would be a mistake to assume that breaking down your product into many smaller ones automatically means that you can't present them as a larger product together. Google really is a good example of this, with its rich ecosystem of smaller products that all work together. Another approach is a marketplace, where customers can add or remove additional modules to suit their needs. And another approach is something we call screen-in-screen, where the interfaces come together in a unified dashboard. So within one screen you have multiple different products that are showing a dashboard or a widget or particular features. Dealing with commonalities and dependencies. Whatever your strategy is for vertically breaking down your product into smaller products, they will have much in common. There probably needs to be a uniform branding to the product, as well as a shared security model, storage platform, tax law engine, business rules, and so forth. Some of these commonalities might actually become internal products in their own right, for example, a tax law engine for Germany, a tax law engine for the United States. For other commonalities that are not feasible standalone products in their own right, other solutions may emerge. For example, guidelines for branding can be provided through a shared style guide, a shared design document, for example, with frameworks like Material Design or Bootstrap, or shared themes. Recurring technical solutions like a security model or business rules can be shared with packages and code modules like NuGet or NPM. If you look at the advances in software development over the past years, it's obvious that technology is moving in a direction that makes descaling progressively easier. Monolithic products can be broken down into microservices, or independent services, that can be maintained and developed by individual Scrum teams. Development teams can use strategies like a strangler pattern to perform this breakdown progressively. Containerization like Docker makes it easy to deploy services independently in a small virtualized container that can move around hosts easily. Design patterns and architectural concepts like event sourcing and CQRS are created specifically to allow those services to communicate in a robust manner. So in terms of technology, there is a lot available to make this descaling possible. So what are some benefits of descaling your product? The first is that Scrum teams lose most of their dependencies on other teams, and provided that the teams are cross-functional enough, this makes it easier to deliver a done increment every sprint. And that's helpful because it shortens the feedback loop, and that reduces risk and makes the team more responsive to the stakeholder needs. The second benefit is that product ownership is simplified, because each small product has its own product owner that has full mandate over that product. There is no need for the complexities of scaling product ownership across dozens or hundreds of teams, or worse, to create hierarchies to product ownership that stifle responsiveness and mandate. Instead, product owners work with the stakeholders of their products, users, customers, and other teams, to evolve the product to best suit their needs. The third benefit is that each product can have its own profit-loss balance, which makes it easier to determine which products are valuable and useful and which are candidates for creative destruction. Individual products can be sold if needed, to other companies or competitors or other players in the marketplace. It encourages a more entrepreneurial approach to your products. A fourth benefit is that the modular approach of descaling products means that it's easier to start experiments with potential new products. When experiments fail, the blast radius is limited to just that small product that you're working on. And finally, and maybe most importantly, this approach to descaling development by decreasing complexity in your product by breaking it down effectively encourages something called anti-fragility. When a large product fails, the damage is much more significant than when a smaller product fails. When organizations effectively have a swarm of small products around a unifying purpose, the swarm evolves as some products make it and others don't. And that's something that you see very clearly at Google, for example. Now, obviously, descaling a product is not a silver bullet solution. It brings its own challenges. For example, what does marketing look like for many smaller products instead of a bigger one? How do you coordinate changes that affect many products? How do you keep the work done by Scrum teams integrated with the larger purpose of the organization? How do you manage commonalities between the products and reduce duplication of effort? But compared to the challenges of scaling the development of a single product across dozens or hundreds of teams, it seems to us that overcoming the challenges of descaling a product is more likely to result in an increased focus on value, responsiveness, and a culture that encourages experimentation. In general, a sense of entrepreneurship among teams, which honestly is something that Scrum is going for, we think. A paradigm shift. When it comes to complexity, the challenge is not to think big, but to think small. This is the paradigm that is at the heart of the Scrum framework. But in product development, we often fall into the trap of thinking big and scaling Scrum by adding more teams. Inadvertently, we're adding complexity. This makes it likely that work slows down, becomes fraught with dependencies, and risk increases. In this episode, we argued an opposite approach. Instead of trying to mirror the complexity of the product with complexity in the teams, why not break down your product into smaller, less complex ones? This strategy of reducing risk by breaking down large chunks into smaller ones should be deeply familiar, as it is an inherent part of the Scrum framework. Isn't it interesting that we so often resort to thinking big when it comes to scaling, when instead we may be better off thinking small? And with that, we've reached the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something new about scaling Scrum, and maybe we've made you a bit more skeptical of scaling efforts in general. Let us know in the comments what you think, what your experiences are, what you've tried to descale your products, what worked for you. Many of the strategies in this episode are just our own experiences, but there are probably many more strategies that you can use to descale your product. Let us know and share it with others too. If you like the content that we create, you can go to patreon.com/liberators. And if you like this episode in general, please review it or rate it or give it a thumbs up on the platform that you're listening on. Maybe even share it with friends that are also working in scaled Scrum efforts and maybe try to change that together. Good luck with that. And we hope to see you again for the next episode. If you have any feedback for us, please let us know. We'll see you again for the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.